Happy Sabbath to all of you. It's really good to see all of you here and to recognize that we've had a lot happening in the last week, as I'm sure most of you know, and perhaps can even gain some of the information and so on that is coming out from Allen, Texas, and all of the things that have been covered concerning the ministerial conference. And I'm sure you'll hear more next week when Mr. Evans is back to give us all the information firsthand. And my wife and I, of course, were at home, but we were able to watch most of the conference through the videos that they took and on our TV station we had. But anyway, I can't read her lips. She's saying something back there. She's probably telling me, you need to tell it the way you ought to tell it, you know, rather than the way you're saying it. But anyway, that's just part of life, isn't it? We all talk through life. We say different things, etc. And the sermon today is going to be centered around a section of that from the viewpoint of what we look at and what we see in the world today. Like, I was just looking at some of the news that's happening from the Jerusalem area. And I say the Jerusalem area, meaning all the areas around that whole section of land. And I think most of us know that the arena of Jerusalem is on the minds of quite a few people around this whole world. Everyone seems to make tours or trips to Jerusalem, including the Pope at Rome. He made a trip just recently to Jerusalem. And you ask yourself, why do people make trips to Jerusalem? Why do they go to Jerusalem? Because that's where everything took place. That's the center, in one sense, of the whole world, of where things have happened in times past and will happen in the future. In fact, this article here, or these series of things that were said the Shiite militia launched an offensive yesterday to take back Ramadi. And, you know, it's relieving the Iraq security forces who lost it over a week ago. So it's kind of interesting that you have your back and forths in all of that part of the world, and we also have back and forth in other parts of the world, such as China, such as South America. You know, not too many people think about South America for the future as far as what's going to be happening on the world scene. Why not look at South America? Why not look at all parts of the world to see where God is working? To see where God is working. I remember many times Mr. Armstrong had said certain things about the future, and I learned one thing at that particular time that has stuck with me all the way through the ministry of Jesus Christ, and that was that Mr. Armstrong had what you would call a hold of the word faith and trust. He had a hold of the word faith and trust. He believed what God said, even to the place that where something didn't look like that it was going to happen, he'd still wait for it to happen. He still looked forward to that part taking place. And that's where the faith was there. And then all of a sudden, if it didn't happen, it didn't destroy his faith. It just helped him to realize that God said no. And it wasn't time yet for those things to work out. But did that stop him from looking and seeing and preaching about things that are happening around the world? And I think most ministers think of that and think of what we should be doing as far as thinking about what other peoples are doing and what's coming next. What can we look for yet? And when we see these things happening in the Middle East, it mentions here, too, that according to the Washington Post, it says religious fervor. I thought this was interesting. Religious fervor is needed. You think about that. Religious fervor is needed in the face of the Islamic State's extremism. They fight with faith. We need their energy. Kind of interesting that all of a sudden you find that religious peoples, and this is right around the world, anytime you find where you have religious peoples, whether they be in West Texas, as we had some in times past, whether it be Waco, Texas, whether it be other areas in the world, we find that when people are revolved around in their minds and thinking with religion, you're going to find a bunch of fighters. Energy. People put forth energy. And you know the same thing in the true church of God. The same thing in the true church of God. We're fighting to tell this whole world what's coming and the blessings that they're going to be receiving in the future. It's a beautiful thing that we are striving to do and looking forward to do. So when I saw these things concerning ISIS, concerning the airstrikes in Yemen, and international negotiations over Iran and the nuclear program that's likely to extend beyond June the 30th, so all of a sudden now we've got the fear of this nuclear force. I think if you look at the Old Testament as well as the New Testament, I think you will find that we need to fear what God is going to be doing and all the power that's going to be unleashed across this nation and around the world whenever God decides to do so and to bringing about His plan and what He is doing for our future. And it's going to be a wonderful future because it's going to last forever. A beautiful future that we're going to be having and looking forward to. One of the things I looked at when I was thinking about this sermon, which is going to involve Persia and Greece and the propheticness of those things. And I say the word prophetic. Prophecy is just words from the Bible that talk about what is to happen in the future. And sometimes we emphasize on those particular things because it's important that we emphasize on them. For us to keep our minds glued to those parts of the Bible, to be aware and to be knowledgeable about what is going to be happening in the future, lest we all be confused and left in the cold because we didn't. In other words, we didn't look forward to see what God was doing and watch it even come to pass. I remember some time ago that someone said, well, what about the book of Enoch? And I thought in my mind, the book of Enoch. Now, what is the book of Enoch? And a lot of other statements concerning others who wrote books in the Old Testament. So I did a sort of a survey of that. And I started off with just the term, the King James Bible. The 1611 King James Bible. And I thought, isn't this interesting that through Ephraim, one of Joseph's sons, which is the British peoples, and the others who live in that whole area, the Scottish people, etc. And all of a sudden, in 1611, which was, 1611 years after the start of this side of B.C., A.D., and all of a sudden, you find that from the Christ's time, of course, it's less than that, but all of a sudden, Jesus inspired and helped one of the sons that he said was going to be ruling the world to write a book that everybody should follow and live by. It's called the King James Version of the Bible, not 1611. And we know there's been a lot of things actually coming off of that particular book and many other writings as well that came along. But before that book, we find a lot of other books were written. And let me give you just a little bit of, besides the King James Version, which we use to pass on the Word of God, the book of Jasher. There's the book of Jasher. And I'm sure that is a book that many used sections of to complete the Old Testament and to bring us information concerning the Old Testament. Do we have the book of Jasher today? I've not seen it. Have you? I know that there were several of these kinds of books that were put out, including the book of Enoch, that someone said was put out by God through the prophets and so on, that is through the prophet Enoch. And I looked at the information concerning where it was printed, and it was printed in England. Because there is a book out called that, printed in England. And I believe it was put out by one of the world's churches that's very high. in the minds of a lot of people. But anyway, everybody wants somebody to read that to say that there's something we're missing if we don't read it. But when I was in the Navy, I read through quite a few of those extra books that were supposed to be added to the Bible and never were added to the Bible. And I didn't really see the value of those particular books. It seemed like it was someone's particular idea concerning the Bible itself. And, of course, we could say the same today. Some people say, I don't understand the Church for God Worldwide Association because they write all these booklets, et cetera, and so on, based on the Bible. Yes, but when we read them, we find that it points us to the places in the Bible we need to go. And so that's part of the reason why we need books, too, as well, to help us to have a better view of things that's happening around us, too. And what about the time of Joshua and the time that the sun stood still? That was written about in a book, where the sun stood. I don't know where that book is. It's probably been destroyed by now because of the value of the Bible itself today. And you can read about some of that in 1 Kings 11:41, such as the book of the Acts of Solomon. The book of the Acts of Solomon. And going on down the line, you could find the books of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel and Judah, which we have today, Chronicles, 1 and 2 Chronicles. And you'll find that in 1 Kings 14, 19, and 29. Books of the Law of Moses. We have the first five books of the Bible, which Moses was responsible for. And remember, Joshua actually was responsible after Moses on that, and actually would read from the book of the law to all the people to get them to understand what he had to say. Another one in 2 Kings 23:2 called the Book of the Covenant. The Book of the Covenant. And then in 1 Chronicles 29:29, the Book of Samuel, the Book of Nathan, and the Book of Gad, which were all prophets. So they all wrote books too as well. And you can see that in 2 Chronicles 12 and 15, one of the scriptures there. And then Shemaiah was, that's in Chronicles, is Shemaiah the prophet. And then the book of Jehu, the book records of Ezra and Esther, Ezra 4 and Esther 10 even. And the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia. So if I wanted to know a little more about Media and Persia, I'm going to go back to Ezra and Nehemiah and Esther to find out some of the history of that part of the world that was dealt with even way back then. And then it goes on and talks about, more important, the Book of Life. The Book of Life, and that's the one God has. And that's the one that he writes our names in which our names are going to be in the Book of Life, as it says in Philippians 4 and verse 3, and Revelation 3 and 5 and 21, 27 and 22, 19 is referred to as the Book of Life. So there's a lot of books are written along the way. And we need to understand, like, for instance, even Jude, who was one of the apostles of that time, who wrote and said in Jude 1, verse 14, Enoch prophesied and preached. And so therefore, even though there's no record that says the book of Enoch in that term, but we can look at it as saying that Enoch prophesied and preached, and perhaps there was a book written that was passed on through Noah. And even to this side of the flood, how would Jude know about it unless Jesus himself told him? Said, well, you know, I just want you to know, you know, that Enoch, you know, preached and prophesied and told us all certain things that I had mentioned to them even at that time. So how do they fit in with what we need to think about today? If we're looking at Persia and Greece and some of those what I would call countries over there, and how do we look at it, and how does it fit in with our thinking? Let's go first of all to Matthew, the 24th chapter, And the reason I'm going to Matthew, the 24th chapter, is because our boss, Jesus Christ, is the one who gave us the information that we should be thinking about. In Matthew, the 24th chapter, and beginning in verse 3, as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world?" Because that's what they talked about all during that time. Now that was about 2,000 years ago or so, or whatever, less than 2,000 years ago, that that was written and that was stated at that time. That's what they wanted to know then, that's what we want to know now. We want to know all of these things too as well. Tell us what's going to happen. And Jesus said to them in verse 2, See you not all these things, verily I say to you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And they were talking about, as it says at the end of verse 1, the buildings of the temple. In other words, they wanted to see what was going to be happening with that. So tell us how these things will be and what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world. Now, isn't that the statement that we've all looked forward to and wanted to know all about and have probably a lot of mixed understandings in our minds concerning it with all that we've read? And Jesus said to them, "Take heed that no man deceive." The very first thing he said was that there's going to be deception. There's going to be deception out there. And later on in chapters, or back to chapter 17, he had talked about the leavening that's out there, whether it be in books, whether it be writings that the scribes, of course, even had at the time, and the Pharisees, Sadducees. He said, beware of the leavening. And you would have thought, well, did they have concordances back then? Did they have all of these extra books written by other mankind at that time? Yes, they did. That tried to tell the stories of what they saw, etc. But then added what they wanted to add to that too as well. And so Jesus was warning that there will be leavening along the way. So you've got to, with the Spirit of God, the power God has given us, discern and see what is leavening. Have you ever been caught unawares of what you were beginning to believe and to find out that it was all leavening, that it was not true? Why didn't you see it? Why didn't I see it? There were some things that came along and said, well, that makes sense. And then all of a sudden, when you do more studying in the Bible, it doesn't make sense at all. So it's what we go through. It's what we do. We read, we study, we prepare, because isn't that what we learn with the Feast of Pentecost? That is the Feast of the First Fruits, representing the time that we're going to be part of the very family of God, and we need to be training toward that and learning how God thinks, learning how Jesus Christ thinks, and learning to think like our Father and Jesus Christ, who sits at His right hand. We have to understand that far above all the heavens, as it says in Ephesians, the 4th chapter. They're looking down, they're seeing what we're doing right now in Sabbath services and are here in presence spiritually speaking. And so are the angels that are here too as well. And I believe that there are angels here. That's what God says. He says they are the watchers. They're the ones who see what is going on and can report things as well as how they see it to God. In the end, God comes down and checks it out. This happened all the way through the history of the Bible. So Jesus here was trying to give us the understanding. And he said there in verse 4, Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name." And I know we brought this out years and years ago, meaning that they're going to come in the name of God and Jesus Christ. And people in this world today believe, oh, they must be of God because that's what they're preaching out of the Bible. but they don't realize the leavening going along with it as they're preaching and some of the things that they would say to them. He says, "And shall come in my name, saying that I am Christ, and shall deceive many." Shall deceive many. "And you shall hear of wars, rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for all things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." And I thought in my mind when I first read that, you know, about 50 years ago, when I first read that, I thought, well, the end is not yet. Well, when is it going to be? when is the end really going to come? And what do I have to go through to see that end? And Abraham, I found out later when I read what Jesus had to say about Abraham and where he longed to see what you see. So Abraham never met Christ in his physical form, but he met him in his spiritual form, because Jesus walked and talked with Abraham back during his time. And so therefore, the end is not yet. Nation shall rise against nation, and we're seeing that now in the Middle East. We're seeing certain things headed toward what the apex of what I believe will happen, which I'll mention a little later. "For nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in different places." And we're beginning to see more of those. Pestilence has been around a long time, and we've had earthquakes from time to time too as well. And these are just the beginning of sorrows. So that's just the start of those things. And you say, well, I've been around for anywhere from 10 to 50 years, and we've seen a lot. When's it going to end? We all want to know, when's it going to end? When's it going to come to pass? And he goes on to say here that all things are the beginning of sorrow, these things. "And then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, or of you," as the Greek says, "and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake." We thought that happened several years ago. We thought that we were running into trouble whenever we were actually cut off in some cases of speaking in certain areas and even other certain parts of the world. One of the things that I remember way back before the Six-Day War that happened with Egypt over there, that I remember that we had, for the first time in the history of the church, and I believe the Radio Church of God at that time, that they had bought several thousands of hours of times to preach the gospel of the soon coming kingdom from Jerusalem. We'd been given a contract where we were going to begin to do that. And then all of a sudden, when they had the Six-Day War, it was cut off and our contract was worthless. So we didn't get to do that. And so since that time, I've preached, and I know many others have preached too as well, that time is still coming. That time is still coming, that we're still going to be able to preach to this whole world. Today, we are involved with writing on the Internet, and that is the message going out to the world. We're involved with television. We're involved with other ways of getting the gospel preached to the world. But how is it going to really be, you know, for the future? I remember one time sitting in the Bible study back in the 50s, and Mr. Armstrong was asked that same question. And he said, what's going to happen for the future? Right now we're on, at that time I think, we were on tape and radio, and TV was just coming along in 1955 there. And what's going to happen in the future? He says, "I believe in the future we're going to have the broadcast going around this world from Telestar." Now, that was back in the 50s. I don't know where he got the word Telestar. But it still was said, and I thought, you know, you need to understand that also, too, that could even involve the spirit world. Because that's where it is, in the heavens. So how is this going to happen? We know that the two witnesses are prophesied to come along at the time of the end and to preach to this world and to be guided, it says, by the power of Jesus Christ. He's the one who's going to give them the power and the strength to do that. And they were prophets that he sent forth to do that job. They're referred to as prophets, in fact. But you see, there's going to be a lot of people who would deny and reject them too. As Jesus said, I'll send them apostles and prophets and they'll reject them. Because you see, people don't want anyone to tell them what to do. And that is broadcast from the satanic world. Because that world of angelic beings don't want anyone, including God who created them, tell them what to do. It's really amazing, and the same thing happens in every family that comes along when children are born. The kids are told what to do by the parents, and after a while the kids said, you're not telling me what to do anymore. There's an attitude and a frame of mind there, and sometimes it happens in the church. I remember one time a person said, well, you said this was going to happen and that was going to happen, and I'm tired of you giving us all this false information. I said, it's not false information. It's straight from the Word of God. He said, I don't want to hear it anymore, and I'm not going to be around, and I'm going to leave, and I don't want anybody telling me what to do. Well, I'll tell you what, if you don't come to a place where you allow someone to tell you what to do in the right way, will you be in the kingdom? We all go through that. Every single one of us are at different facets of a place in the history of the work of God. Somewhere in that history. And we're striving to do our part, and we're striving to be obedient to what we should be doing as far as helping to accomplish the work, whether it be through tithes and offerings or whatever leadership you might exude within the church and be used within the church. That just tells us that we are wanting to do what God wants us to do. And so we find that the worldly things that's happening around us, and that's why I was bringing it up about Persia and Greece, is that they tend to be a part of our living and is part of what we're thinking, etc., from time to time. And so I wanted to cover a little bit about that, but notice what Jesus said as we go on here when he passed all of the things and said we'd be hated of all nations. In verse 10, and then shall many be offended. How easily are we offended? And why are we offended? And how does it come about? And shall betray one another. In some cases, some don't know that they have betrayed someone else. So how do we look at these things? And shall hate one another. Why would we hate one another? Because we're all going to be part of the same family. But that's, you see, what Jesus said. And many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. Now he's talking about the world in general. And because iniquity, lawlessness, shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Shall abound. Meaning, why is this happening? Why am I trapped in this situation where I have to put up with this kind of thing? But notice what Jesus said. Iniquity abound, love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure. That's one of the characteristics that's necessary for every Christian to have as part of their mind and their thinking, is that he who endures to the end. I've been asked many times along the way, how did you endure some of the teachings that were in the church that weren't correct? And I said, I endured because I know who is the leader of the church, Jesus Christ. He's head of the church. God set him so to teach all of us. And so therefore I know that Jesus Christ, in his time, with his looking at every single one of us on the computer that's in his mind, he knows what everyone needs. And even the tests that we need to see whether or not we're going to remain faithful and loyal. I asked myself many times over whenever he was dealing with the angelic world, why is it that one third of all the angels decided to leave and go another direction and quit listening to the scriptures of truth as both Michael and Gabriel told Daniel there, that they were both the ones who stood in the Scripture of truth. The others didn't stay in the Scripture of truth. They formed their own ideas and their own concerns and so on, which was opposite of God. And it's referred to as iniquity and sin because it goes against the very laws of God. And if you break any of the laws of God, the penalty is death. Wages of sin is death, Romans 6 and verse 23. So you have to understand that God has it all set up ahead of time. He who endures to the end, the same shall be saved. Endures as a Christian and as someone who wants to live and obey God's laws, commandments, statutes, and judgment. And he said, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations. The nations, I suppose you'd say, that are in South America. Do we have a very powerful work going on in South America? I know Mr. Walker is doing a great job in that whole area dealing with the Spanish work and the Spanish people down there and others as well, which are the other linguistic languages, which we're now beginning to realize can be a problem as time goes on because it seems like there's quite a few. And it's almost as if maybe we should learn and be granted the power of God to speak in tongues, meaning that we say the truth in English, but they hear it in their language. We need to understand that that kind of a miracle can happen again, and as we go forth, we need to pray and ask God for that to happen so that all of the ones who are involved with dealing with the other parts of the world, when they speak the words of God, that those people can hear it in their own language and understand it in their own language. And that, of course, will be the miracle of God. For a witness to all nations, and then shall the end come. But we don't know when that's going to be. We think we do. And I remember we all, and in those particular days, were wrestling with 1975 in prophecy. So how many of you were involved with that? I mean, as far as 1975 in prophecy, do you remember any of those things in times past? A few of you do. And a few, that is two, maybe more than two. But anyway, it's a matter of recognizing that we all were looking for fleeing to a place of safety 3 years before 1975, because we're supposed to be 3 years in a place of safety, being tutored by and worked with by Jesus Christ. And so that's what we had thought at the time. We got closer and closer and closer to 1975. And whenever Mr. Armstrong was asked about it, he said, look, we have to believe what God is going to do until we find out. He absolutely says, no, it's not going to happen this way. So we stand firm until the end of what we have said, and we feel that we were inspired to say what we said because of all the conditions that you see around you. And so therefore you wait patiently with a right attitude, not a bad attitude, and to recognize it's going to happen. And so therefore, when 1975 didn't happen, or actually 1972, 74, 5, so now somewhere in there, they were actually, believe it or not, they were actually located on the third floor of the library building where we had the offices at that time, waiting for God to give them the information on going to a place of safety. They literally went through that. And of course it began to taper off at that point because they weren't given any information. And so therefore, in one sense, the light began to come on before you got to 1975. And so therefore, we just continued on knowing that God would continue to work with His church and realize that that was a point in the history that didn't happen as we thought it was going to happen. But did we believe it was going to happen? At the time, we did. At the time, we did. Because of other circumstances and so on that were working out at that time. The only thing that didn't happen that was prophesied to as well was the fact there was no Third World War with Germany at that time. Because of World War I, World War II, and everybody was expecting a World War III, which would be the world war that would end everything. When you look at the world today with about, 8 billion people, someone said one time in one of the upper areas where they have more knowledge than we do as far as trying to count. And, 8 billion people on the face of this earth you have to deal with now. Or let's say 7 billion, or even 6 billion. Even 6 billion people, billion people that you have to deal with on the face of the earth today. How do you do it? And how do you carry on the work of God with that many people? Because they all need to be told about their future. And as time goes on, we still are working at doing that. And God will guide and direct us as time goes on too as well. And He will bring the nations together that will bring it about. And those are the little keys along the way. So let me show you some of the keys of what He said here after He talked about the false prophecy and iniquity and so on and the gospel being preached. Notice what He says in verse 15. He says, "When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet." Okay, right away somebody says, "Well, I know who that is." Do you? Does the church know? Ask yourselves questions concerning some of these things. "This abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso reads, let him understand." And that particular word is the one that we have overlooked a lot. Because we didn't understand. We thought we understood. And so even to this day, sometimes we think we understand, but as time goes on, then we have more things revealed to us. Then we begin to understand more so. And maybe even given more information for that. So it's a matter of recognizing that we still have the Bible today. We still have the books written that God intended for us to read today. And as I mentioned in the beginning, He used Ephraim to bring that about. And if you look in the prophecies of all three major prophets, you'll find that it does talk quite a bit about all the things that's yet to take place. And we try to put some of those things way in the future in places we think probably they should be. But should they be there? In other words, how's God going to bring it about? I think we have to understand that the Church of God is an ongoing working vehicle for God. Sometimes He lets us know exactly what's going to happen. Other times He lets us postulate and lets us look forward, trying to see what we're going to think, trying to see what we are evaluating all of the Scriptures to mean and how it affects our lives as we walk forward in this life. And so we have to understand that when he said, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whoso reads, let him understand. And if you do understand, then it's time to flee to the mountains from Jerusalem. That is, those who were gathered around in Jerusalem. How many times do you think that happened since the time that Jesus said it? You ever go back and try to see in history how many times people fled from Jerusalem thinking it was the time of the end? You ever read in history how many people have taken their whole group over there to die in the desert of Sinai, thinking that they were doing the will of God, thinking they were doing God a service? And the same thing with others who were brought into Jerusalem and sent back to Denver, Colorado, as I understand it, because they went in and tried to steal all of the guns of the police department and start shooting all of the police officers because their minister had said to them that if you do that, that will bring on the coming of Jesus Christ. More leavening. More leavening. People are so leavened up, it's our responsibility to warn this world about the leavening that continues to creep in. It messes up everybody's life when leavening begins to creep in. and especially when it comes to God, because most people, when they understand, well, if it's God says that, I've got to do it. And I need to do what God says for me to do. But we have to understand that we cannot allow us ourselves to be deceived with all of that. And so Jesus said, look, you check it out here and you see what I'm telling you is going to happen. And it talks about the abomination of desolation. And I believe it even was said one time, and it was not the Coke machine. See, we were, for a while at Ambassador College, we were going around talking about different things as being abomination. That's abomination. That's abomination. That's abomination. What do you mean it's abomination? What does that have to do with? What was the abomination that Jesus was talking about here? It was talking about a religious situation. A religious situation that was coming along and is going to happen. Where people would be blinded and will be following this person, as it says in Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians there, or 2 Thessalonians 2. It talks about someone sitting in the seat of religion and everybody following this person in the seat of religion and going different directions. Have people thought about who that might be and are their eyes open to see in the future for that? And will angels now begin to appear and cause people to go away from God? You have to understand that that has happened. That has happened and will happen even in the future. Don't let it scare you to death. Realize you have more power at your disposal to use than any angel has. God the Father and Jesus Christ are behind what we say and do if we follow them and honor them. I remember one time, and I believe it was down near San Diego, somewhere down there, where this person actually had a bright being appear to them in the bedroom, and they're about ready to go to bed. And this bright being said to them, we're sent to you from God, and we're here to tell you that you have to obey the Sabbath day. Now, this person had been reading material and information concerning the keeping of the Sabbath, etc. And all of a sudden, here's a being that comes in and tells them that. And it disappeared. The next night, it came back again and said to this individual, oh, by the way, I just want you to know there's been a change in plans. You have to worship God on Sunday. It's amazing how people, and in this case beings, can work to deceive. So we have to be aware then, don't we, of wrong visions, of wrong things that are going to be happening from the wrong angelic world of sinners. Of those who disobeyed God's laws and commandments. They weren't willing to abide by the scriptures of truth as Gabriel and Michael and all the other angels. They were they followed their leaders who followed the scriptures of truth. And so therefore we need to understand that and see what our part is. And the reason I brought out Persia and Greece is because that was part of the original prophetic things that was mentioned to Daniel as well. So let's go back to Daniel, the second chapter. Daniel, the second chapter. And let's see what was given to Daniel. And see what will come of that. Daniel 2. And it mentions here that the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, he dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep was not with him anymore. He broke from him. And the king commanded and called the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans. That's what he had at his disposal at that time. For to show the king his dreams, so they came and stood before the king. And the king said to them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spoke the Chaldeans to the king in Aramaic or Syriac, O king, live forever, and I will tell you the dream. I'll tell your servant the dream, and we will show the interpretation. And so all of a sudden you began to see that during this dream, let's go now to verse 31, where Daniel was given the information in verse 28, because there is a God in heaven who understands all of that and will show what shall happen in the latter days. So that's also one of the descriptions of us knowing what is going to happen, is because we know that God will reveal that. Now, many times God has already revealed it through His Word, but spiritually speaking, we can't understand it. That's part of the problem. See, we need to pray and ask God for more of His Spirit to understand what He's saying. And skipping down to verse 31, you, O king, saw and behold a great image, the great image whose brightness was excellent and stood before you, and the form thereof was terrible. And this image's head was of fine gold, and his breast was silver, and his belly and his thighs were brass, and his legs were of iron, and his feet part of iron, part clay. Then he goes on and mentions a fantastic thing that will happen. You saw till a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image on his feet, and that were of iron and clay, and break them to pieces. And then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold, were broken in pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, and there was no place found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Now, a little later on in this same dream and so on, he talked about the kings that were to come. And we have to understand that those kings that were to come haven't all come yet. Now, we know that kings of the Medes and the Persians did come. We know that. That's mentioned in the Scripture, too. And we know that Greece was also involved in that. So how does the Bible, and what does the Bible say about these two areas of the world? How do we look at it? How do we look at those particular parts of the world? If we were to go back and do a synopsis of the Old Testament and Abraham's time. Abraham went to Egypt way back when. And we know that the ones who came out of the ark, and some went east, some went north, some went south, and some of Abraham's seed went south, because Abraham went down to Ur of the Chaldees, which is almost to the Persian Gulf. And so therefore, at that particular time, there was a lot of things happening. You had the Babylonian city that was there. Remember, it came back from Daniel's time. Babylon existed in that sense of the city. In fact, if you go back even further than that, you'll find that Cush on his side was involved. In fact, later on, he was referred to as the one who was over Egypt, too. And you'll find a lot of things continually came out of Egypt. And every time someone would go down, like when Jeroboam went down to Egypt, he came back and changed all of God's holy days by using Egypt. And to this very day, I thought about it when I was preparing this. I thought about it that I can open my billfold right now. I think I still have one. And I can pull out the dollar bill. And guess what's on the dollar bill? An Egyptian pyramid. Why is that on one of Ephraim's or Manasseh's money? Why is that? Why does Egypt get involved all the time, it seems, with that, with the pyramid? And the pyramid actually within the Church of God, way back in the radio Church of God, was something that everybody looked forward to seeing. It was something special to them. And I thought, why is it special to them? My wife and I and our daughter was there, and we could put a piece of paper in between the stones. We were told in the earlier years that it was so fantastically made, you couldn't even take a piece of paper and put between the stones. And yet, we have to understand and recognize that even though God can inspire and will inspire certain things, that was a pyramid that was a tomb for a Pharaoh. What does that have to do with us today? We say it's history. And it's idolatry throughout the entirety of the land of Egypt. And even going up and going down, I should say, to Ethiopia and that area too as well. A lot of paganism and worshiping of idols and so on. And that's what we have today, and that's what we do today too as well. We follow those kind of things. And we need to recognize that God says we're not to do that. And so here in the book of Daniel, it gives us a synopsis and continually gives us understanding concerning what is going to be happening in the latter days. Let's go to chapter 7 now. Chapter 7. And notice what it says in chapter 7. Beginning in verse 1, it says, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions on his head in his bed, and when he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. And Daniel spoke and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea." And of course, when you say great sea, are you referring to people? Are you referring to water? Because it talks about many people, meaning our ocean or our water, meaning people even, back in Revelation. Anyway, the four great beasts came up from the sea, different from one another. And the first was like a lion, second one's like a bear, verse 5, and the sixth like a leopard, which was Greece, and the lion was the Chaldean Empire. And the bear was the Persian Empire. So now we find then that the second and the third was involved there was Greece and Persia. And it goes on, the fourth beast, dreadful, terrible in verse 7. Strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth, and it devoured in broken pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was different from the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And I think you know the story because the little horn that came up and so on did some things. And notice in verse 9 it says, "I beheld till the thrones were all cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and hair of his head was like pure wool, and his throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. And a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him, and thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him." So this is giving you the end result of all of what's going to be happening before the very throne of God, because the second one was around 100 million. And who knows, it might have been 100 billion even by that time, going back and looking and seeing all the people who've been born since that time. And so you'll skip over to the other part of the same chapter here in verse 19. "I would then know the truth of the fourth beast, which was different from the others, exceedingly dreadful, whose teeth were made of iron and his nails of brass, and devoured and break in pieces and stamped the residue with his feet. And of the 10 horns that made his head, and of the other that came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn. They had eyes and had a mouth and spoke very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. And I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints." That's carrying us forward too, unless you want to say that's those who are going to become saints as well. "And prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High God, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom of this earth, along with Christ as their leader and their chief. And thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom on the earth, which shall be different from all kingdoms and shall devour the whole earth and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. And we strike our minds sometimes and who in the world is that going to be? Well, I think Daniel felt the same way, didn't he? Who's that going to be? And what did he think even during his time? All I know is, brethren, is that there were a lot of prophetic things made for us to take a look at. And we need to pray and ask God to help us by the power of His Spirit to understand it and to see it and to recognize it for our life, even at our time today. And perhaps some of these things will not come to pass even in our lifetime. Because we know that Jesus Christ came along 1,600, whatever it was, years from the time of the former prophets, and they were looking forward to seeing Him come, but He didn't come for 1,600 years. So, and it's been 2,000 years approximately, or 1,900 years at least, between the time of Christ and what He said was going to happen. Has it happened yet? We haven't seen that happen yet in the way that Jesus said for it to happen. And so therefore it is still going to happen, and the book of Revelation actually covers all four of those beasts as well, including the last one, which Daniel couldn't tell you about. And the reason he couldn't tell you about it is because the information wasn't given to him to tell you about it and me. In fact, didn't the angel tell him in chapter 8, this is closed, this prophecy is closed up until the time of the end. And that referred to the abomination that makes desolate. The only abomination that can make desolate in reality is the one who comes out of the bottomless pit, as it says in Revelation, and takes over and runs that last kingdom on the earth. And he has the power, you see, he has spiritual power to use. And that's why you'll find again the angel Michael will be involved there too, as it says in the book of Revelation. And there's going to be another battle that's going to take place. So I believe the one in talking about in Daniel is going to still happen. It's going to still happen because it says in Daniel, the 8th chapter right on through, that there's going to come a time when power is going to be used, and they're literally going to have a battle on this earth where you see angels coming down from heaven and a battle going on between spiritual forces too. So it's not going to be just physical forces. It's going to be spiritual forces that's going to be at work where people are going to have to see happen in their very eyes. And so therefore, what I wanted to mention here about Greece, about Persia, about that part of the world, it has always been in the history of prophecy. Greece has always been in the history of prophecy. And we know that when we look at a map, you can see the Middle Eastern part, and you'll see also, too, going clear over to Esther's time and Nehemiah's time, and Ezra's time, and you'll find that they understood a lot at that time because of the captivity that they had to go through. And so a lot of information was passed on down to now. And let's go to, in closing here, let's go to Daniel, the 11th chapter, and let's see what is said here, because this is the latter part of that leading up to what's going to be happening. It says, in the year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm, to strengthen him. But now I will show you the truth. I will show you the truth. And behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia. Three kings in Persia. And the fourth shall be far richer than they all, and by his strength, through the riches of his life, shall he stir up all against the realm of Greece. So we're talking about an end-time prophecy of where one of those kings of Persia is going to stand up against Greece. and the Grecian power of that time. And it says, and a mighty king shall stand up and shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and divided to the four winds. And then down in verse 5, it talks about the king of the south, which usually is always referred to as Egypt, as the king of the south. And in the end years, they shall join themselves together through marriage, as it says in verse 6. And then verse 7 says, but out of a branch of her roots shall one stand up in his estate, which shall come with an army and shall enter into fortress, and the king of the north, and shall deal against them and shall prevail and shall carry captives to Egypt. Their gods with their princes and with their precious vessels of silver and gold, and he shall continue more years than the king of the north. So we find here the king of the north, king of the south, that is going to be involved. But it also starts off with what's happening between Persia and Greece. Now, if you go back and read the rest of chapter 8, you will find in those areas there, you will find that it talks about whenever the battle between the spiritual forces at the angelic level. You will find then that the prince of Persia was actually no other than Satan. It was a satanic battle that went on, and that's why Michael had to come help Gabriel at that time. If you read Revelation, you'll find that Michael is involved again with the prince of Greece, which will be a satanic battle as well. In other words, Satan will be involved with that too as well. So those are the ones that we have to look at and to see of what is yet to take place. And then after that, the stone that was cut out without image and all of those that's part of that stone will take over. And then it comes time for the saints to rule the world. That's our future. And that's what we can look forward to. And it doesn't look like it's going to take many more things to happen before that happens.